God has really blessed me. You know, he let me work in D.C., let me work with EIB in Hollywood, in Silicon Valley. And he's shown me through all those experiences that there is one problem and one solution, and that's why we do this show.
Welcome to A Disciple's View with Todd Herman.
When the God of the universe created the world, he didn't snap his fingers or wink his eye. He spoke. The Lord said, "Let there be light." Because we believe, we speak about the happenings in this world as we remain mindful that our true home is with Jesus Christ in his kingdom. I'm Todd Herman. Welcome to A Disciple's View. Scott Shara is a man who's become a friend of mine. His daughter, Grace, had Down syndrome. They took her to the hospital. And in my judgment, and you can read the lawsuit, you can read all of Scott's work, you can listen to this discussion. In my judgment, in this case, this girl was murdered. She was 19. It's my belief, having looked at all the evidence, there is a lawsuit that's been allowed to proceed, which is extraordinary. It's very difficult to sue a hospital system and doctors based upon civil assault of Grace. They couldn't make it a criminal charge, but the civil assault's important. What you're going to hear is a discussion about how Scott says the Lord has revealed to him a reality about the American medical system, not all the people in it. He's clear. There are great doctors and nurses, many of whom are listening right now. My family's mostly in healthcare. You can watch this entire interview at thetoddhermanshow.com. Scott, why don't you just take us through this? I know you've been speaking around the country and been invited as a place now as a subject matter expert. And why don't you just take us through the story of Grace, what you've learned about the medical industrial complex, and make sure we get up to date on the lawsuit.
So quickly on the lawsuit, we filed the lawsuit April 11th of 2023. We went through motions to dismiss on July 11th and October 30th. The judge did not allow any of the motions to dismiss to continue. We had the jury trial scheduled for November 4th. That was just moved to June 2nd of 25. And the reason is there was a hearing on July 29th, just a couple weeks ago, Todd, that was to accomplish two things. Number one is I was under a gag order, believe it or not. You know, we had the first round of depositions. They held a gun to our head, so we're not going to let you do the doctors and nurses depositions unless Scott's under a gag order. And of course, that takes away my First Amendment rights. It cost me $20,000 in extra legal fees for that diversion, but you know, the judge lifted the gag order relative to I can release the transcripts and the audio. He did not allow me to release the video, which is interesting, but we're not going to go on that rabbit trail. The second piece of the July 29th hearing was to move the trial date. And the reason was, is during the main doctor who was involved with Grace's death, during his deposition, he brought to light that there was a different doctor that was in the supervisory role that day other than the doctor that we believed was the one. And so there's a, again, in the legal system, people don't realize this. They think, oh, you know, it's really great you have a lawsuit. Well, this is a lawsuit in the Antichrist legal system. You know, praise God we have it. So we're not just shedding light on the medical industrial complex, but also the legal industrial complex. So anyway, in that vein, what happened, Todd, is I met with the attorneys after the depositions and they said, well, what do you think about adding this sixth doctor to the defense? I said, I don't want to add another doctor because it's going to change the trial date. And then, you know, as we were debating this, one of them brought up the reality, and then we all agreed that there is a legal principle in this Antichrist system called the empty chair defense. And if they, in the trial, they start throwing all the blame on this doctor who's not there and the jury agrees with that, we end up losing. So we had to add him, and that changed the trial date by 7 months. So I get you up to date on the trial. What's been happening with my research, Todd, is it's taken two direct paths under Genesis 50:20. So Genesis 50:20 says, what you meant for good, or what you meant for evil, God meant for good, the saving of many lives, which is happening today. So the physical saving, what I've come to grips with is how many decades this whole situation was put in place to expose COVID. COVID allowed me to see this. So that's the physical piece. The spiritual piece is, of course, much bigger, because what we've been sold is a psyop called the American Dream to get us off of the reality of relying on God. So then we end up relying on men and ourselves, And that's the much bigger picture. I did a series on that called The Matrix Revealed to expose the world matrix. And that was a four-part series. It took me about 500 hours of work just to get it recorded. And it's down to 6 hours of recording, which is pretty neat. Takes a lot to get there, as you know. All right, so relative to this business of how did we get here? So in modern times, you could say, well, you know, is it the vaccine agenda that got us here? Was it the Flexner report that got us here? I'm going to show you these stakes in the ground as this slide comes up. But the first stake in the ground, so I came to grips with my spiritual study, Todd, that the law of entropy did not exist until the garden. I believe the law of entropy is the ultimate method that Satan uses to manage this system on earth. When Jesus said, you're the prince of this world, well, how does he do it? Well, he starts all these things, and through the law of entropy says we go from order to chaos, or from freedom to control. But he uses an illusion like where it's perceived to be more orderly, yet it's not orderly. It's more chaotic. And I'll get you the first test question, Todd, on this, and we'll see how you do, is should we hold doctors to their oath? So that's all your audience who's listening. Just think about that question. Should we hold doctors to their oath? So what do you think, Todd?
Gosh, I would think that an oath is something to which we should hold doctors. And the Hippocratic Oath is first do no harm, as it says on the slide for people watching video. If you're listening, yep, it's a slide with, hey, some frogs in water. They look like it looks nice in there. I mean, it's all, you know, nice and cozy. The Hippocratic Oath, 400 BC. Yeah, I think we should hold people to that. What do you think, Scott?
Well, I thought that too at the beginning, but then my podcast is called Deprogramming with Grace's Dad, and the reason it's called that is because that, I think, is, at least today, that's why God allowed Grace's death, is so that he would allow me to become deprogrammed, and then what I'm learning, share it with other people. All right, so the deprogramming relative to the Hippocratic Oath, the programming says first do no harm. So that's what we believe the oath is. Well, the reality is, I'm just going to read the first paragraph out of the Hippocratic Oath, and you'll see that, no, we don't want to hold doctors to their oath. In fact, we don't want them to take this oath. Here's the first paragraph, Todd. I swear by Apollo the physician and Asclepius the surgeon, likewise Hygieia and Panacea, and call all the gods and goddesses to witness that I will observe and keep this underwritten oath to the utmost of my power and judgment. So we see the two fallacies right in the opening paragraph. This is two satanic gods, and it's through his own power, nothing to do with the God of the universe. And the God of the universe warned us in Matthew chapter 5 that we're not supposed to make oaths. So this is, the deception started in 400 BC. Well, then the next deception.
So just jump in real quick on the making oaths things. I mean, there's some context and some nuance to that. Don't make oaths like this. You can have a covenant with the Lord God, the actual God of the Bible, but don't go out making oaths like this, and don't make oaths where you intend to lie, such as I swear by the hair on my head that no, don't do that. So I just wanted to pause there.
Yep. Right on. Yeah. Thanks for that clarification. There's many, many, many stakes in the ground, but I'm going from 400 BC to modern times.
Got it.
You know, in the 1880s, the boogeyman started with the whole virology agenda. So virus, vaccine. So this manipulation, the law of entropy, set us up for COVID, the Hegelian dialectic model that Satan has brilliantly mastered. Problem, reaction, solution. So problem, virus, reaction, fear, solution, vaccine. Problem, virus, reaction, fear, solution, vaccine. Repeating over and over and over. You know, already in the 1930s, doctors were speaking out against vaccines. They were, but nobody would listen. Why? Because they were using reason to explain, and they didn't realize this was spiritual. They were speaking out saying, none of the patients that I see with cancer, the consistent theme is every one of them, this is in the 1930s, Todd, every one of them that has cancer was vaccinated. So this is not something new. All right, so then you have a major, major stake in the ground, Jacobson versus Massachusetts. So that's the Supreme Court case. A pastor by the last name of Jacobson, He did not want to take the smallpox vaccine, took his case all the way to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court decided with the state of Massachusetts, and this still is the law of the land in the Antichrist legal system. Really should not be the law of the land because the court should not be able to make law, but it is the law of the land. Here's what they wrote, Todd. And this is the court. In every well-ordered society charged with the duty of conserving the safety of its members, the rights of the individual in respect of his liberty may at times, under the pressure of great dangers, be subjected to such restraint to be enforced by reasonable regulations as the safety of the general public may demand. All right, that's the key Supreme Court decision that allowed COVID to happen. So we have this psyop of COVID, but they made it into this. It's a great danger. So then we can mandate vaccines. And they had the Supreme Court authority to do that. So this is the spirit of collectivism. This is evil beyond evil. So we've got to do what's good for the population versus the good of the individual. And that was has been successfully weaved into society. When you leap forward to today, you'll see that Medicare and Medicaid is now the tool that is used to implement the spirit of collectivism. In between Medicare and Medicaid was passed on July 30th, 1965. In between was the Flexner Report of 1910. And Abraham Flexner was hired by the Carnegie family, then supported by the Rockefellers, to develop what we would call conventional medicine, trust the science. So that was the motto that got behind the Flexner Report. We can't trust chiropractic, osteopathic, naturopathic. We can't trust any of these snake oil salesmen. That's, you know, that's what they led us to believe. So yep. We got to trust the science. Again, right. This is how COVID was pulled off. So now, how does Medicare and Medicaid work?
Ask any doctor what it's like to work within Medicare and Medicaid, a doctor who doesn't want to, or doctors like I've had on the program who've left the pharmaceutical industrial complex, the insurance complex, so they can actually practice healthcare, not medicine. Remember that, Scott? There was a shift. We practice medicine. So Medicare, Medicaid, tell us about that, Scott.
Yeah, I mean, that was another great introduction, Todd. How I learned about this, strangely, is I learned I had heart disease 6.5 years ago, and heart disease, there's a slide, the top three killers historically in America. Heart disease is number one, 700,000 deaths a year. Yeah. Cancer is number two at 600,000, and medical, quote, malpractice, end quote, is 400,000 a year. So we have 142,000 new medical murders a month. These are as a direct result of the medical industrial establishment. We're not even talking about how did we get cancer? How did we get heart disease? By poisoning the food, poisoning the air. We're just talking about the treatments are designed and the treatments kill these people. All right. So what happened after I learned I had heart disease, Todd, is I started studying, and then I learned about the lie, the cholesterol lie. You've got to cut your cholesterol in half because that's the cause. It wasn't the cause. It's not even in the top 10. And ultimately, they wanted me to go on the statin. Oh, yeah. So I said, after studying, I said, no, a good nurse walked me out. And this is fantastic. I really give her a lot of credit. She said, Scott, you have to take the statin. I said, what are you talking about? I don't have to do anything. And she said, our Medicare and Medicaid reimbursement rates are based on what percentage of our population, our patient population, takes the standard of care. And the standard of care for heart disease is the statin. I said, I'm not on Medicare and Medicaid. She said, you're not hearing me. Our entire patient population has to follow the standard of care because CMS, Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, controls the entire medical industrial complex through standards of care. So if enough people like you don't follow the standard of care, we have to fire you as our patient so we keep our percentages up because we have to get reimbursed at the maximum percent from CMS in order to make our practice work. All right, so this is not a joke.
So you look now at Medicare and Medicaid across the states, they invented something called the fifth vital sign. Pain is a vital sign. We'll come back with part two of my interview with Scott Shara, friend of mine. His daughter, Grace, went into the hospital. In my judgment, she was murdered. A court proceeding is going to just tell us, with a whole bunch of discovery, what kind of justice system we have. We'll come back on the Disciples View. Welcome back to Disciples View. This is an exclusive piece, a discussion with my friend Scott Shara. His daughter Grace was 19, taken to the hospital, and in my judgment, she was murdered. Now, there is a court case proceeding in this. You can go look at all the evidence. You can go make your own judgment in this case. It was the COVID protocols that did this. You can watch the entire interview, and I encourage you to do that because of some of the visuals Scott uses at thetoddhermanshow.com.
We did approach the district attorney's office, Todd, relative to a criminal case because we believe Grace's death is criminal. And the district attorney, I'm going to quote this. So the slide I have is, why do doctors follow the standard of care model? And right from that slide, I'm just going to read this. This is from the district attorney's office responding to our attorney's request to open up a criminal investigation. She wrote, a doctor is not required to administer treatment she or he believes is not medically effective. This includes authorizing a DNR. The parties clearly had a dispute about how Dr. Shokhar should treat Grace. Dr. Shokhar did not abide by the wishes of the family. They acknowledge it right in the letter. However, there is no law in Wisconsin that requires him to do so. And this is a real zoom out that people are not aware of. We think that we have, you know, there's a law for informed consent, and there kind of is. But the reality is you sign away your right to informed consent when you enter a hospital in general. In specific, when you look at state statutes for informed consent, you see that there, you know, if you think about a stat, why do we even need a statute for informed consent? We have a God-given right to informed consent, the right to live, right? Treat your neighbor as yourself is God's informed consent. All right, so why do we need a statute? Well, the statute is always designed to wrap the doctor around a bubble. And when you, with the doctor violates the informed consent statute, Todd, your appeal is to the medical examining board. You can't make this up. The medical examining board, of course, in Wisconsin is made up of 10 doctors and 3 lay people. So that's the traffic cop giving his buddy traffic cop a ticket. Never going to happen. And there's no appeal process. So that's how tight this system is. That's why it's very hard to break into this. You know, I praise God we have this lawsuit. When I go back, I want to go back to standards of care here for a minute because I want to go through the one that everybody in your audience would be familiar with, and that is cancer. I'm not talking about you, Todd, who's awake, but if somebody off the street finds out they have cancer, what is the programming? The doctor is programmed and the patient's programmed. First, the patient is programmed that this is the kiss of death. There's no cure for cancer. We've worked, you know, we've worked 100 years. There's still no cure for cancer. Well, they've been lied to. You and I both know there is cures for cancer. So what are they programmed to believe once they get the diagnosis? Well, I guess I'm going to lose my hair and I got to start chemo. And what does the doctor do? Starts them on chemo. No question. They only have 3 protocols that are the standard care: cut, radiate, and chemo. That's it. So now what happens with chemo? Chemo has a 97.9% kill rate. The doctor never tells them that. In their program, the only thing they care about, they ask the doctor, does my insurance pay for it? And, you know, newsflash, your insurance is in on it. Of course they pay for it. I'm reading a book right now called Dissent in Medicine. This book was written in 1984. Standards of care started in the early 80s. These doctors, 9 MDs, wrote this book, and they were already realized these standards of care are killing people. Relative to cancer, I'm going to quote right out of the book because they had some shocking quotes about cancer. This is already in 84. This is a quote. The entire field of orthodox oncology will disappear as chemotherapy, surgery, and radiation for cancer are revealed as fundamentally irrational and scientifically insupportable. So they were already alarming in their profession, not realizing this is a spiritual battle. The conclusion, a patient stands a better chance of recovering if he is never diagnosed. Wrap your head around that. That's allopathic medicine. That's conventional medicine, which we've all been programmed. We got to have insurance, right? The programming is so deep. So now wrap this into Medicare and Medicaid. I call Medicaid is for the disabled generally. Medicare is for once you're 65. So we've been programmed, right? Oh, we get free medical care once we're 65. And I see this now as a death funnel. Assuming you survive heart disease, cancer, and medical malpractice, there's 2.8 million deaths annually in the United States. Those three account for more than 50%, 1.7 million of the 2.8 are directly caused by the establishment. Assuming you make it through to 65 and you get your free Medicare, all right, I call that the death funnel. What's the reason? It's because of these standards of care. There's 135 million Americans on Medicare and Medicaid right now, Todd. Now go back to the spirit of collectivism. People are too expensive. You know, they're always threatening. We've got to do something about the Medicare, Medicaid costs. We've got to do something about Social Security. Well, here's the numbers. Almost $5 trillion a year to fund Medicare, Medicaid, and the related Social Security. So they have, that's over 50% of the annual federal budget. So they have come up with this idea that we've got to hasten the death of these people because they are too expensive. Think this through. So we have a fiat currency that facilitates that. We have Jacobson versus Massachusetts, which set up the spirit of collectivism. It's the ultimate death sentence. And then people blindly think they're getting free health care once they turn 65. And what the Clintons did, the final nail in the coffin for Medicare and Medicaid, is they married Social Security and Medicare together. Once, if you choose to take your Social Security, remember you paid into this your whole life. So you say, oh, I got to take my Social Security. That's what I banked on for my retirement, right? Now you're locked into Medicare.
Yep.
As soon as you take Social Security, you're locked into the death funnel.
And let me expand the conversation a little bit too, because I think this is very, very vital. If you wanted to produce type 2 diabetics, what would you do differently than the American food system? If you wanted to do that. Or for instance, we just had government authorities in on multiple continents tell people that eating Frosted Flakes is better for you than eating meat. We have we have organizations saying eating fake meat is better than meat. What's in meat? Meat. What's in fake meat? Well, 28 products, maybe 32 that are, you know, the carrots don't bleed. But you know that fake blood in your Miracle Burger or whatever, your Satan Burger, that stuff is, that's carrot juice and beet juice. They don't bleed. So there is this effort to just say to people, like to men, well, you shouldn't work out. Remember this? You know, lifting weights, it's a tool of white supremacy. Or this, people who run a lot have more heart attacks. Well, and men who have high testosterone, they're at this great risk, right? Everything they're doing in the American food system, and for that matter, in England as well, would produce diabetics. So if you walk through the grocery store and you don't just walk around the, and they're understanding that people are hip to this now. If you shop on the outside of the grocery aisle, you're pretty much okay. Fruits, vegetables, meat, a little bit of dairy, not a lot of it. But they're pushing into this, and there's no greater sign of this than I remember the day I brought home a chicken breast, or just about brought it home. It's when I started my fat loss journey. And it just happened to be that the chicken breast, the back of it was exposed, the label, and it said high fructose corn syrup in it. In a chicken breast. High fructose corn syrup is more poisonous than sugar. It's more concentrated. It drives your blood sugar. It spikes your blood sugar. It causes you to be hungrier. This is what our government told us to eat. The food pyramid is exactly what you would do if you wanted to produce a bunch of type 2 diabetics. Interesting thing about diabetics. For a while, they're great money. Because in their productive years, man, they're buying all sorts of devices and blood sugar devices, and they eat a lot of food, and man, they do a lot of things like that that are great. But when they're now no longer working and they reach retirement age, they're super expensive. So now comes in the standard of care. And this is where we get back to how this is being used, I think, and Scott, you and I agree in this to some degree, this calling of the herd. They say they want to do it, believe them. You know, when I'm talking about that food system, you're kind of nodding. I saw your response when I said high fructose corn syrup, producing type 2 diabetics, it seems.
Yeah, right on. And the food pyramid, I mean, think about going to grade school and, you know, that lie just kept being repeated.
Yep.
Vaccinations are also the standard of care. When I put together this slideshow, my daughter Jessica came up, or she found this thing on Facebook. I'm not on Facebook, I'm too old. But I titled this, "Was the Standard of Care Model Designed to Kill Us or Designed to Program Us?" And this is from inside. So this is an insider. This lady is a labor and delivery nurse. She's proud of this. She put her name right on it. This is a Facebook post.
Okay.
I'm going to read her Facebook post. She says, "As a labor and delivery nurse, it was up to me to inject the newborn. Even back then, over 30 years ago, we had patients that would refuse. I know that it was their right as patients to refuse, but as not only a nurse, but also a mother, I just could not send a baby home defenseless. I know what I did was not right, but I would inform the parents I was taking the baby to weigh him or her on a more precise scale and then take them to the nursery and inject them. Just had to do it. No baby was going to bleed out on my watch in spite of the parents' stupidness. So wow. That should shock anybody. I mean, so what's the message? You have to advocate for your loved one.
You mentioned that as you went into this, so many people have a life-changing event like this, that your dear, dear, as you call her, your best friend, your daughter Grace, went into the hospital. You guys trusted the white coats. One of the things they did to you, I want to make sure people don't lose track of this, as I recall, they at one point did a head fake with you where they called you and said, hey, Scott, Grace is doing so much better. We need to start working on a plan for feeding her when she comes home. We're so excited. And you've been able to track down and triangulate what was actually going on when that doctor made that phone call to you. Because to me, this nails it home. People don't cover up what they're proud of. They cover up what they're worried about or what they are ashamed of or they know is going to get them in trouble. Can you tell that story real quick?
Yeah, the head fake. I really like that term. This really is the major smoking gun. So when you overlay timelines, you see the smoking gun. So he called Cindy and I the morning of Grace's last day at 10:12 in the morning and started that phone call with the fifth request for a pre-authorization for a ventilator. As soon as we said no, he said, we should work on nutrition today. We should get Grace out of bed, get her bowels moving so that the next several days we can get Grace home. He said Grace had such a good day yesterday that we should start working on these things. Well, he had already strapped Grace down to the bed before the phone call, made her defecate in the bed. While we were on the phone with him, he increased the dose of Presidex, the sedation med, to the maximum allowable dose. And simultaneous with hanging up the phone, we got done with the phone call at 10:55. At 10:56, he put the DNR order on Grace's chart. So, I mean, that really is, you know, when you start looking at that combination of events and then overlay it with what the pharmacist whistleblower said, it's like, no question in my mind. It's open and shut. You know, I can't be 100% objective because I'm in it, right? The forest through the trees thing. But, you know, now, you know, I've zoomed out a lot and connected the dots and I see this through, you know, the spiritual agenda and what I see it through, Todd. I know we've got to wrap up and I want to tie this together so people understand. We have Satan who is using the law of entropy. So I believe that first stake in the ground was with the Hippocratic Oath. And it's, you know, it's a spiritual agenda. Satan's been at war against God since the beginning. Why? Because God made man in God's image. And so Satan hates God, so consequently he hates man. So he's going to do whatever he can physically and spiritually to get us away from God. Why do you think there's 38,000 denominations? That's just in the, right. There's so many things when you peel it back. Okay, well, what did God warn us about ahead of time? I'm reading Revelation 18:23 here. He said, for your merchants were the most important people of the earth because with your pharmakia, they deceived all nations. All right, so God told us this is going to come about through pharmakia. And I believe right now we're seeing it happen in real time. We're seeing that Satan is using big pharma to finish the job started by Hippocrates. Satan is a legalist, and he has unlawfully legalized our murders. And he's got to warn us of this ahead of time. There's a principle in Genesis 18:17 that I want to make sure people understand before we're done. In Genesis 18, that's when God said to Abraham, and the specific reference in 18:17 is, shall I not let Abraham know what I'm about to do? This is before he destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. And that principle of God letting us know what he's going to do before he's going to do it applies to Satan because Satan is under God. So Satan has to let us know what he's going to do before he does it. And he has let us know. However, we've become essentially lazy, reliant. We want a king, right? 1 Samuel chapter 8. And so all of a sudden we rely on men and our laziness, and pretty soon we're in the trap. And we become the boiling frog. And, you know, you're waking up people. I'm waking up people. I mean, it's our mission. We're watchmen on the wall now. And that's what I see our responsibility. I can't talk about it enough. And then the last thing I would say, Todd, is that what people are looking at to fix things. They're like, oh, let's do Grace's Law. I mean, I've been approached with that. Well, you can't contract morality. Let's get a new administration. If we just get Trump in, that'll fix everything. Well, that's a deception. God warns us in 2 Thessalonians that there's going to be a great deception. What about the courts? Well, the courts, oh my gosh. I mean, the courts have become part of that whole antichrist system to make us believe, we can just do a lawsuit. I mean, Grace died October 13th of 2021. Our jury trial is June 2nd of 2025. Does that sound like justice? That time period is just not justice. Then on top of that, assuming that we win, the doctors don't even lose their license. I mean, it's like there's no consequence. In God's system, there's choice and consequence. That system has no consequence for the doctor. So what's the solution? I think time is urgent to take the white pill. And I'm not talking about a pharmaceutical white pill. I coined this phrase, Todd, the white pill, exposing the matrix, the blue pill, red pill. Okay, what about the white pill? Well, the white pill is our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. And that is the only way out of this.
That was a small piece of an interview I did with Scott Shara. His daughter, Grace, in my judgment, was murdered in a hospital using the COVID protocols. And I do pray for the hospital system and the doctors. We'll come back and get into the Tower of Babylon under Disciples View. Welcome back to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. We'll get to the Tower of Babbling. Got to catch up some things from the Democrat National Committee. There is a member of the city council in Chicago. His name is Raymond Lopez. And for people who've not been paying attention to what's going on in the cities, African-American people are being alerted to the fact that replacement theory isn't just a white nationalist theory. It never was. There is a fact that there is an effort to replace native-born Americans with the newcomers who have a view of government that government should supply them everything they need. And the Democrats love this because it's destroying the Electoral College count. It's empowering Democrat cities and counties with more votes than they should have in Congress, 23 to 28 new congressional seats. It's a backdoor to overtaking the Electoral College because they can't do it on a constitutional amendment. It is no less than that. So now, though, in cities like Chicago, a lot of black people are saying, hey, wait a minute. We're noticing that these illegal immigrants are getting $2,200 a month, and some of them are getting $10,000 just for moving here. Why would you bid for this? Because of what I just described. And the federal government will come back and pay them back for that. So taxpayers in Idaho and Iowa and Texas, you're paying for this program, this overthrow of the Electoral College system. So black people in Chicago are starting to say, wait a minute, you're telling me my kid can't get into that school now because there's illegal immigrants into that school? Wait a minute, you're seizing that building? We were promised that housing, but now it's for the newcomers. This is going to lead to the same frustrations that have led to people in England who have never demonstrated politically, never rioted for sure, going to the streets and doing both those things. So this Democrat, who's a member of the Chicago City Council, Raymond Lopez, he actually went on Fox News, the enemy, and talked about his view of the Democrat National Convention and how he views it in terms of his job and the people he represents. And it's not a kind interpretation he offers.
Democrats winning any new voters at this convention.
I highly doubt it. I think this is all playing to their own base, not trying to recruit new people, because clearly the Democratic Party, my party, is not interested in talking about what matters. How are you going to keep people safe? How are you going to secure the border? And how are you going to deal with the 8 million undocumented individuals that they let in under Kamala Harris's lead?
So he's still using the undocumented individuals nomenclature. He doesn't want to see illegal immigrants. He doesn't want to be completely tossed out of his party, but he's in trouble. I firmly guarantee that guy is not going to be in Congress. Oh, the Democrat National Committee is not going to back him. And maybe he's a guy who doesn't care. In that case, God bless him. One of the great weapons against getting seduced into politics as a living is to not care and to state up front, I'm not running again. I don't want to be in politics forever. I'm only doing this as a job. Those are hard people to control. One of the reasons that people dislike President Trump is he's hard to control. You know, Reverend Warnock, Raphael Warnock from Georgia, as I recall the story during a messy divorce proceedings, and by the way, find me a non-messy divorce. And some friends of mine are getting divorced, and for a while they were living in that afterglow, that happy time where they had a terribly tumultuous, troubled marriage, and having made the decision to finally end it, both of them were a little bit euphoric. Not right now, because reality's hitting. And it's very, very difficult for them, and we are all praying for them. These are lovely, beautiful people, and I actually believe there was strong biblical reason for this divorce. It's deeply, deeply tragic, particularly for the kids. So we're all gathering around them, all of us. So during a messy divorce, Raphael Warnock apparently ran over his ex-wife's foot. And then there was an effort to seal these records, to have it unknown. He was also involved. His church apparently had low-income housing that turned out to be very, very much slums. But Raphael Warnock, he's a fighter on behalf of the people. He's a socialist. And this is weeks after President Trump narrowly avoided being murdered. And here is what the Reverend Raphael Warnock said about President Trump.
Donald Trump's America is the America of January 6th. People who have no vision traffic in division. He does not know how to lead us, and so he wants to divide us. America, make no mistake, Donald Trump is a plague on the American conscience. He is a clear and present threat.
Wow.
To the precious covenant we share with one another.
He is a clear and present threat to the sacred covenant we share with one another. Clear and present threats are often treated as someone who should be taken out permanently. Raphael Warnock, the Reverend, speaking at the Democrat National Convention on the importance of uniting Americans at the same time as the Democrats are saying to Americans, you will pretend that man is a woman or you will lose your job. You will let that man stand next to your wife in the shower at the gym, or you will lose your gym membership. You will pay for abortions, or we will charge you with tax evasion. Division. Not to mention the fact that they constantly race divide. That's the Reverend. He's a Reverend Raphael Warnock. On this program, though it's frustrating sometimes, we do not doing this segment. It's frustrating to see people like that in positions of power, but we thank the Lord for doing that, for placing supposedly wise people like the Reverend Raphael Warnock on tall towers of shaking sand. We do that with our feature called The Tower of Babbling.
You know about the biblical truth of the Tower of Babel. A Disciple's View presents...
The president takes shouted questions. I understand, John. I understand. I understand. I have dealt with this question about three times already. I understand.
The Tower of Babbling.
Three soundbites in today's Tower of Babbling. Is that right? No, wait a minute. Oh gosh, it's a four soundbite day in the Tower of Babbling. Must be because the Democrat National Convention is going on. Tim Walz lies about everything. Everything. We played the full version of this earlier. So you know there is a full version. We provided it in context. Tim Walz pretends that he and his wife used in vitro fertilization to have their kid.
Today's IVF day. Thank God for IVF. My wife and I have two beautiful children.
Yeah, except that's not true. They did not use IVF. CNN pointed this out. They had to walk back his statement. To directly lie that way about something so vital, it's not who are you, it's what are you. Who lies about that? Tim Walz. I truly believe Tim Walz is so spiritually captured. I truly believe that he thinks any lie can become truthful because it leaves his mouth. Well, it didn't happen, but I've said it, so now it happened. It's also deeply deranged. Second soundbite in today's Tower Babbling. A reporter is talking here to President Trump. It might be a little unclear, so if it is to you, I'll try to translate.
Thank you. This is a common compliment. There's a campaign attacking you for being in his town because they say you're a white supremacist, you're a hundred.
Who was here in 2021?
Joe Biden.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
So this is what the so-called reporter asked President Trump. She said, you're being criticized for being in Howell, Michigan, because it's been associated with white supremacy. President Trump. Who was here in 2021? Joe Biden. President Trump. Thank you. It was associated with white supremacy. So was Dr. Ben Carson. He was called a white supremacist by the Southern Poverty Law Center because an era of lies exists within Washington, D.C. power structures. They become the lie. Next up in the Tower Babbling, my friend Chris Bray called this out on his excellent Substack blog called Tell Me How It Ends. It's chrisbray.substack.com. Note, sometimes he uses some language that we don't use on AFR and we don't use in our private lives. Brilliant writer. He wasn't able to identify who this woman is. She's speaking at the Democrat National Convention, and she says things are terrible. You won't believe what's going to happen. You won't believe it at all.
Tonight, I want to tell you about just one aspect of Project 2025. It's planned to turn Donald Trump into a dictator. Now, by the way, if you're asking if any of this is even legal, well, remember, thanks to Donald Trump's hand-picked Supreme Court, he's now completely immune from prosecution, even if he breaks the law.
That's not true, of course, not anywhere near true. Acting in his official capacity, it's difficult to charge him with breaking the law. But putting Americans in jail is not within his official capacity. That's the DOJ. He can't do that. He can't murder Americans. That's not within his official job capacity. Last soundbite in today's Tower Babbling. This is a side session. So there's the main event, main stage where people go speak. Some of the lesser personalities, they get to go speak at these little side sessions. This is a DNC speaker who appears to be making the case for President Trump.
In 2023 alone, the U.S. poverty rate saw its highest moment, a year increase that was higher than ever any time in history, rising to an unbelievable 12.4%. Child poverty as well doubled from 5.2% to 12.4% in just 1 year. We have to make sure that we're electing leaders who truly believe in the people and who want to make sure that they're standing for the people.
Yes, let's do that. Oh, if only we could have had Joe Biden and Kamala Harris for the past 4 years.
That was the Tower of Babbling.
I'm just following my orders here.
On A Disciple's View.
We very often wrap up this last segment, with a personal observation from yours truly. And we'll do that again today. There's something I've been trying to have my coach at CrossFit do. I didn't have to try too hard. She was pretty enthusiastic about it. You know, I'm training for this event coming up at the end of September called Seal Fit. I can't even believe it's this close. I'm getting very, very, I want to say excited. I'm taking nervousness and turning it into excitement. It is a little tiny version of Hell Week, and I say little tiny version. A lot of us are going to be awake for 50 hours. I may need to do the 24-hour version of this. Because my swimming is not, post-shoulder surgery, my swimming has been the last thing to come back, and I refuse to put my cohort of seven guys in any form of risk. of not completing or not securing, not getting through that because I am not up to snuff on swimming. So I'm going to make that decision this weekend. If I can't go out and swim a mile and a half nonstop, I'm out. So I'll do the 24-hour version, which doesn't have the water. So I've been training hard for this, obviously. And I asked my coach to help me train for it. So one of the things she's been doing is programming days where she's not going to tell me what's going on. The other day, and I made mention of this, and there's a point to this that's not just about working out, that she had me wear my 30-pound backpack and pick up a 100-pound sandbag. And then we walked that sandbag to a park to which I'd never been, no idea where it was. And we got there, it was about, turned out to have been about a half-mile walk with that. It was long. Dropped it, she said, run around the park. Pick it back up. Where are we going? I'll tell you later. And anytime I put down that 100-pound sandbag, I had to do push-ups or air squats. And when we got back to the gym, there were other things to do. And she said, you're doing a very good job of just accepting what's happening. You're going to have to do that at Seal Fit because they're not always going to tell you what you're doing. I want you to know you're doing a very, very good job at that. So in doing that, of course, there's the trust of coach. I mean, she's not going to want to stay over. She's only getting paid for the hour, or in this case, an hour and a half I paid her. So there's that. But there's also this. We've worked together for 4 years. I know that she has my best athletic interest at heart. I know her to be a good and godly woman. But I take this thinking and I transfer it. And I find myself a hypocrite and a fool. I trusted her to get that done, that this is going to make sense. And sometimes I don't trust God's timing in the same way. My gosh, how I owe God an apology. It's a stupid 90-minute workout. It has no real impact on my life. Yes, I want to do well at Seal Fit. I want to thrive. But I can't trust God's timing? Why is it so hard for us? Why is it so hard? If you can explain that to me, I'd love your notes. You can write to me at thetoddhermanshow.com. I mean, oftentimes I trust God's timing, but oftentimes I find myself wrestling with it. Be honest with me, do you? Lord, I apologize. In the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Because we believe, we speak. Because He first loved us, we speak His Word. We walk in the path of Jesus Christ to make disciples of all nations. Until God decides we can all speak again together, may His peace wash over you. On behalf of Randy and AFR, I'm Todd Herman. This has been A Disciple's View.